Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Last week, I aired the first part of the interview that I did with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts in September of 2012. Today, you'll hear the second part of that interview, and then I'll be reading parts of an article that he wrote at the end of September of 2012, and I'll conclude the show with a song that wasn't part of the original airing of this show back in September by Van Morrison, on the global elite, capitalism, the media, and propaganda. But first, let me tell you about Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. Paul Craig Roberts has had careers in scholarship and academia, journalism, public service, and business. He's the chairman of the Institute for Political Economy, and he served under President Reagan as Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy from 1975 to 1978. He's also the author of 11 books. The latest one is called How the Economy Was Lost, The War of the Worlds, which came out in 2010. He has a website that is paulcraigroberts.org. He has an internet column that has attracted worldwide attention, and he has many, many articles there. And I'm going to just read you the titles of a few of them. Here goes. Is Washington deaf as well as criminal? The next election, high-stakes outcomes based on non-issues. Syria, Washington's latest war crime. The neocon war criminals in our midst. USA to continue its wars as long as dollar remains reserve currency. The message from both parties is that Americans are disposable. And then here's the title that drew me to ask him for an interview. It's called The 11th Anniversary of 9/11. I frequently read his articles, and he has long been a critic of the official conspiracy theory of what happened on 9/11. So let's begin with the concluding segment of the interview with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. And here it is. Now, let me ask you, where do you see our country and the world headed in the aftermath of 9/11?
Well, I think, you see, the whole purpose of 9/11 was to give the neoconservatives, which totally controlled the Bush administration at that time. There wasn't an important office in the Pentagon or the State Department or wherever that the neoconservatives didn't hold.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be easy for them to pull something like this off. Now, what's happened with the Soviet collapse, it unleashed this neoconservative ideology of American hegemony, that it's the end of history. It's the opposite of Marx. The proletariat didn't win. The capitalist won. And there's no alternative to America, so we are the indispensable nation. It's a version of the French Revolution. The French were going to carry their revolution to all of Europe, and the Americans to all of the world. And there are no limits on the force that can be used, because history has vindicated our system. And we not only have the right, we have the responsibility to impose it, and by force of arms, if not by persuasion. And so force of arms works better. So I think we're headed to nuclear war. I think the United States government, which is totally dominated by this ideology of American hegemony, no matter which party, will drive the world to nuclear war. It's getting close at hand. Once they get rid of Syria, there's only Iran, and then they're face-to-face with Russia and China. And Russia, of course, is already being surrounded by missile bases and military bases, and the Obama regime has announced that we are refocusing our fleets onto the Pacific, onto bottling up China, being able to block their access to energy. We're negotiating for new air bases.
It's a really frightening
Thailand,
scenario.
Naval bases in Vietnam, the Philippines, Korea. So the Russians and the Chinese, I don't think, are going to fall to a color revolution, though the Russians have been really quite stupid. They've let all these American-financed NGOs operate inside their country, including USAID, and all of the Russian political opposition is financed by Washington. And that's kind of a stupid policy. I mean, why would you let
yourself be infiltrated, really?
Yeah, I mean, they're thoroughly infiltrated. And all the CIA has to do is knock off Putin. But the Chinese, I don't think they can succeed there with that, and I don't think they're going to submit. So I think the United States will drive the world to nuclear war. I don't think it'll be too long.
Wow, that's a very frightening thought. What can people do? I think people often want to do something, but they don't know what to do. They're kind of overwhelmed with everything that's happening. And in terms of 9/11 or the bigger picture, do you have any suggestions?
Until people are informed, they can't do anything. And even when they're informed, unless the bulk of them are, they can't do much unless they want to take up arms. And that is no way to organize it. Whoever started organizing it, it would immediately be infiltrated by FBI, and they'd all be arrested. And you don't have any leadership. The system works to prevent any leadership from rising.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes no difference who you vote for. I mean, look at the election of Obama. This was the greatest hopes I've seen in my lifetime.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. Remember how the mall was just packed for miles and miles? This has never happened before. And he had both houses. He could have come in and said, okay, we're holding the people accountable that tortured and spied without warrants, and we're not doing that, and withdrawing all these executive orders about habeas corpus and all the rest, and that's not who we are. But instead, he just codified it into law. So,
and yet, most of my liberal Democratic friends still are working for him and are going to vote for him, and it's just astounding to me.
Yeah, it's the same thing that we see about 9/11. They're just too weak-minded and too emotionally weak. They can't give up their hope and their illusions and their delusions. The way I put it, Americans live in a virtual reality. It's that film, The Matrix. That's what America is.
That's very sad. So you don't sound like you hold much optimism.
Well, the only optimism is that the people in Washington have overreached. They've bit off more wars than they can win or pay for. They've destroyed the economy by offshoring all the middle-class jobs. And now to bail out the banks, the Federal Reserve is now the country's biggest creditor. It buys the bonds and prints the money. So they may destroy the role of the dollar as world reserve currency. I mean, other countries are already moving away from it. The BRICS are forming their own bank and way to settle their balance of payments without using the dollar.
So, and by the BRICS, you mean Brazil?
Brazil, India, China, Russia, South Africa. And so if the demand for the dollar drops, its exchange value goes down, and that will cause the Federal Reserve to lose control over interest rates. And so bond prices would collapse, interest rates would skyrocket, people would be essentially, in the United States, they would be on the verge of starvation. And it may radicalize them so much that they've realized they've nothing left to lose, and they may revolt. Or we may simply just disappear as a power, just because the source of our power is the dollar. We can print money to pay our bills. Nobody else can do that. And we do that because it's the reserve currency. If it's not, because the Federal Reserve destroys it, trying to bail out the banks and finance the government, then all of a sudden the power's gone, and you can't pay your bills by printing money, and you can't pay for sending the military everywhere. There's no fuel. So it can collapse out from under them. And that's what it'll take, I think, to save us from some kind of a nuclear war with the Russians and Chinese.
Well, that's not very heartening.
Well, I mean, you have to be realistic.
You do.
No,
you do.
Point.
Right.
So everything's going to get better. It's not. They've been telling us that about the economy for 4 or 5 years.
Right. I mean, I truly believe that the only way it'll get better is if we, the people, do something. I don't know what exactly that is, but...
Well, they're not going to do anything as long as they've got something to lose. When they got no jobs, they can't buy groceries, they can't get gasoline, then it changes. But that hadn't happened to enough of them yet.
Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you would like to share with the listening audience?
Well, yes, we can just turn to the economic situation that Americans face. The economy turned down officially in 2007 and worsened into 2008 and 2009, and then it turned up, and according to the official statistics, we've been in recovery for a couple of years. Now, that's another hoax. It's all based on the rigged measure of inflation. The way they show real growth in gross domestic product is by understating the measure of inflation. In other words, the only reason the GDP has really gone up is because prices have pushed it up. There's no more production of real goods and services than there was in the depths of the official recession. We're still in recession. It's now, what, more than 4 years old? And it's been a period of tax cuts, massive increases in the money supply, massive budget deficits. In other words, every known stimulative policy of the post-war world has been employed to such extent that they're unprecedented, and yet there's no recovery. So how are they going to get one? How can you get one when millions of middle-class jobs have been offshored so the corporate executives can have multimillion performance bonuses so that shareholders can have profits that drive up share prices and produce capital gains? They've dismantled the tax bases of cities and states and the federal government by sending what was once American consumer income, American gross domestic product, off to India, to China, wherever the labor is cheaper. So they destroyed the domestic consumer income. There's been no growth in median, real median family income at the end of 2011 is where it was in 1967. So how can you have a recovery if nobody's got any money? And we got the financial bubble, the real estate bubble, because Alan Greenspan at the Federal Reserve was trying to substitute the growth in consumer debt for the missing growth in consumer income. And that's what the low interest rates did. It encouraged people. It drove up housing prices. And so they could refinance their houses and spend the equity. And they kept the economy going for several years in that way, and by running up consumer credit card debt. But now the consumer's so indebted they can't borrow anymore.
Right.
And in the meantime, the banks did the same thing to themselves. They became gambling casinos where they were betting against one another and against assets without covering their bets. So when it blew up, the Federal Reserve, which first and foremost serves the banks, rushed in and has been bailing them out ever since. And yet they still have to be bailed out. So they haven't produced a recovery. They haven't made the financial system sound. They've doubled the national debt. They've apparently now finally succeeding in enraging the Muslim world. You see, mm-hmm. the last couple of days, the French and the Germans have closed all their embassies in the Muslim lands. I mean, all these Western embassies are sitting ducks if those people actually get enraged. And why it's taking so long to get them enraged, I don't know. I don't understand.
Yeah.
So if you look at the economic basis of the United States, it's extremely weak. And if the Fed loses control of interest rates because the world abandons the dollar, then the interest on the debt will explode. In other words, right now, the Fed's got interest rates so low that, you know, the interest rate on a 10-year bond is less than the rate of inflation. So it's 1.5% or something. But if it goes to 10, 15, 20%, it'll take the entire tax receipts of the government to pay the interest on the debt. Well, it won't do that. They'll default. Once you default, you're nothing. You're a third world bankrupt country with an IMF program.
Yeah. Now, I know that this is maybe only part of the picture, but would you support a closing of the Federal Reserve since it's a private bank and then set up a structure for a public bank? Would that do any good in this situation?
That's a complicated issue, and I think that whatever bank is there is going to serve the government, and whatever central bank, and will serve the banks because that's what they're for. So I think a lot of that talk is, I mean, the criticisms of the Fed that people with these alternative plans make are sound. But it doesn't mean that their own schemes are going to be much different once they're in operation. Because it's like we said, the power brokers don't generally submit.
Or they would be co-opted or something.
Yeah. Would be happening. Yeah. I mean, look how easily Obama was co-opted, if he wasn't already co-opted before he ever...
Yeah, that's my belief. Well, Dr. Roberts, I want to thank you very much for being on the show, and maybe we can do this again sometime.
Okay, if it suits your audience.
And again, that was the second and final part of a recent interview with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. If you'd like to learn more about him or to read some of his articles, his website is paulcraigroberts.org. And now you'll hear the article that I read in the original show that aired in September of 2012 that is called How the Government Lies Become Truth. So here goes. In my last column, A Culture of Delusion, I wrote that Americans live in a matrix of lies. Lies dominate every policy discussion, every political decision. This column will use two top news stories, Iranian nukes and Julian Assange, to illustrate how lies become truth. The Western prostitute media uses every lie to demonize the Iranian government. On September 28, in a fit of unmitigated ignorance, the UK rag, Mail Online, called the president of Iran a dictator. The Iranian presidency is an office filled by popular election, and the authority of the office is subordinate to the Ayatollahs. Assange is demonized, alternatively, as a rapist and a spy. The Western media and the U.S. Congress comprise the two largest whorehouses in human history. One of their favorite lies is that the Iranian president, Ahmadinejad, wants to kill all the Jews. Last week, the news was dominated by the non-existent but virtually real Iranian nuclear weapons program. The Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu blatantly intervened in the U.S. presidential election, demanding that Obama specify the red line for attacking Iran. Netanyahu believes his maximum leverage over Obama, the president of the world's only superpower, is just prior to the election. Israel cannot attack Iran on its own without the risk of Israel's destruction. But Netanyahu reasons that if he attacks Iran the week before the U.S. election, Obama will have to join in or lose the Jewish vote for not supporting Israel in states such as Florida, which has a large Jewish population and many electoral votes. If the election is close, Netanyahu, a person consumed by arrogance and hubris, might exercise his threat and attack Iran, despite the opposition of former chiefs of Israeli intelligence and military, the opposition party, and a majority of the Israeli people. In other words, the outcome of the superpower's presidential election might depend upon whether the sitting president of the superpower is sufficiently obedient to the crazed Israeli prime minister. That the outcome of the U.S. presidential election could depend upon the agenda of the prime minister of a tiny country that exists only because of U.S. financial, military, and diplomatic support, especially the U.N. veto, should disturb those Americans who think that they are the, quote, indispensable people. How indispensable are you when you have to do what the Israeli prime minister wants? The U.S. media makes certain that this question never enters American minds. Americans have been told that if Iran doesn't have nukes, it has a nuke weapons program. This is what the politicians of both parties, the media, and the Israel lobby tell them. Americans are told this despite the fact that the CIA and the National Intelligence Estimate stick to the conclusion that Iran abandoned its flirtation with a nuclear weapon in 2003, and the International Atomic Energy Agency inspectors on the ground in Iran report no evidence of a nuclear weapons program and no evidence of any diversion of enriched uranium to a weapons program. Moreover, what could Iran do with a nuclear weapon other than use it against an aggressor? Any offensive use would result in Iran's destruction. Why do Americans believe Iran has nukes or is making nukes when the CIA says they are not? The answer is that Netanyahu says so, and the elected members of the U.S. government in the House, Senate, and White House are afraid to contradict the Israeli prime minister, as are the American print and TV media. Some superpower we are. The indispensable people have to grovel in the dirt before Netanyahu. Americans are not even aware of their shame. Iran, unlike Israel, signed the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. Signatories to the treaty have the right to nuclear energy. Nuclear energy requires a low level of enrichment, 5% or less. The minute Iran announced a nuclear energy program, the Israeli government and its prostitutes in Washington lied that Iran was building a bomb. For exercising its legal rights under the treaty, Iran has been painted as a rogue criminal state and demonized. A nuclear weapon requires 95% enrichment. To get to 5% from scratch and then to 95% is a long, drawn-out process. I think I first started hearing Israeli government claims of an Iranian nuke back in the 1990s of last century. When Iran announced that, in view of the sanctions imposed by the U.S., sanctions that affect medical supplies, Iran was going to enrich uranium to 20% in order to supply itself with medical isotopes. The Israeli allegations that this would lead to a bomb resulted in Iran saying that the Iranian government was content for France or some other country to supply their medical isotopes and would not pursue enrichment beyond energy requirements. The U.S. and Russia were also mentioned as suppliers. According to the New York Times, on September 29, 2011, quote, the Iranian president told the Washington Post and later, in basically the same terms, the New York Times, quote, if you, the United States and Europe, give us uranium grade 20% now, we will stop production. On Israel's orders, Washington vetoed the Iranian concession. Solving the problem is not what the Israeli government wants. The problem has to be kept alive so that it can be used to foment an attack on Iran. The Iranian nuke is one of those grand hoaxes, a lie designed to hide the real agenda. What is the real agenda? The real agenda hiding behind the hysterical concern about an Iranian nuke is the right-wing Israeli government's design on the water resources of southern Lebanon. Twice, the Israeli government sent the Israeli army into southern Lebanon to occupy and eventually annex the territory. And twice, Hezbollah defeated and drove out the vaunted Israeli army. A few thousand Hezbollah fighters were able to defeat the Israeli army, which is equipped and supplied by U.S. taxpayers' dollars while Americans are foreclosed out of their homes and left unemployed as Washington applauds the offshoring of their jobs, because Syria and Iran provide Hezbollah with financial support and weapons that destroy Israeli tanks. Syria, of course, is currently resisting its destruction by Israel and its American puppet state. The overthrow of Syria hasn't gone well because the Russians and Chinese didn't go along with it, like they stupidly did in Libya. But the far right-wing Israeli government has concluded that with American prestige involved in the overthrow of the Assad government in Syria, the deed will be done. That leaves Iran. The Israeli government knows that it cannot be forthright and say that it wants Americans to go to war with Iran so that Israel can steal southern Lebanon. But if fear over non-existent nukes can muster the Western populations to support an attack on Iran, Iran can be eliminated as Hezbollah's supplier and Israel can steal the water from Lebanon. There's no discussion whatsoever of the real agenda anywhere in the U.S. print and TV media. I doubt there is any discussion anywhere in Europe, which is a collection of American puppet states. Will we get World War III for Christmas? Possibly, if the U.S. election is close as it approaches. If the election is too close to call, Netanyahu might throw the dice and rely on Obama following his lead. Iran will be attacked and the consequences are unknowable. And I'll stop there with the article. If you want to read all of it, you can go to his website, paulcraigroberts.org. And now here's the song by Van Morrison from the CD Born to Sing, No Plan B. The song is called Educating Archie, and here it is. Global elite. What happened to
much propaganda, entertainment on TV, and all kinds of
concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.